for whatever reason. She arches a brow at my careful blow-dry, and my cheeks heat as Maeve laughs. You might want to give it a try. It's a mundane, innocuous conversation compared to yesterday's lunch, when we caught up on my police visit, Nate's mother, and the fact that Addie got called to the station separately to answer questions about the missing EpiPens again. Yesterday, we were murder suspects with complicated personal lives. But today, we're just being girls. Until a shrill voice from a few tables over pierces the conversation.
It's like I told them, Vanessa Merriman says. Which person's rumor is definitely true? And which person's totally fallen apart since Simon died? That's your murderer.
What's she on about now? Addie mutters, nibbling like a squirrel at an oversized crouton. Janae, who doesn't talk much when she sits with us, darts a look at Addie and says,
You haven't heard? Mikhail Powers' crew is out front. A bunch of kids are giving interviews.
My stomach drops, and Addie shoves her tray away. Oh, great. That's all I need. Vanessa on TV yakking about how guilty I am.
Nobody really thinks it was you, Janae says.
She nods toward me.
Or you. Or...
She watches as Cooper heads for Vanessa's table with a tray balanced in one hand, then spots us and changes course, seating himself at the edge of ours. He does that sometimes, sits with Addie for a few minutes at the beginning of lunch, long enough to signal he's not abandoning her like the rest of her friends, but not so long that Jake gets pissed. I can't decide whether it's sweet or cowardly.
What's up, guys?
He asks, starting to peel an orange. He's dressed in a sage button-down that brightens his hazel eyes, and he's got a baseball cap tan from the sun hitting his cheeks more than anything else. Somehow, instead of making him look uneven, it only adds to the Cooper Clay glow. I used to think Cooper was the handsomest guy at school. He still might be, but lately, there's something almost Ken doll-like about him, a little plastic and conventional. Or maybe my tastes have changed.
Have you given your Mikhail Powers interview yet?
I joke. Before he can answer, a voice speaks over my shoulder.
You should. Go ahead and be the murder club everybody thinks you guys are, ridding Bayview High of its asshats.
Leah Jackson perches on the table next to Cooper. She doesn't notice Janae, who turns brick red and stiffens in her chair.
Hello, Leah.
Cooper says patiently, as though he's heard it before, which I guess he did, at Simon's memorial service. Leah scans the table, her eyes landing on me.
You ever going to admit you cheated?
Her tone's conversational, and her expression is almost friendly, but I still freeze.
Hypocritical, Leah!
Maeve's voice rings out, surprising me. When I turn, her eyes are blazing.
You can't complain about Simon in one breath and repeat his rumor in the next.
Leah gives Maeve a small salute.
Touché, Rojas the Younger.
But Maeve's just getting warmed up.
I'm sick of the conversation never changing. Why doesn't anybody talk about how awful About That made this school sometimes?
She looks directly at Leah, her eyes challenging.
Why don't you? They're right outside, you know, dying for a new angle. You could give it to them.
Leah recoils.
I'm not talking to the media about that.
Why not? Maeve asks. I've never seen her like this. She's almost fierce as she stares Leah down.
You didn't do anything wrong. Simon did. He did it for years, and now everybody's sainting him for it. Don't you have a problem with that?
Leah stares right back, and I can't make out the expression that crosses her face. It's almost triumphant.
Obviously, I do. So do something about it,
Maeve says. Leah stands abruptly, pushing her hair over her shoulder. The movement lifts her sleeve and exposes a crescent-shaped scar on her wrist.
Maybe I will.
She stalks out the door with long strides. Cooper blinks after her.
Dang, Maeve. Remind me not to get on your bad side.
Maeve wrinkles her nose, and I remember the file with Cooper's name on it she still hasn't managed to decrypt. Leah's not on my bad side, she mutters, tapping furiously on her phone. I'm almost afraid to ask. What are you doing?
Sending Simon's 4chan threads to Mikhail Powers Investigates, she says. They're journalists, right? They should look into it.
What?
Janae bursts out. What are you talking about?
Simon was all over these discussion threads full of creepy people cheering on school shootings and stuff like that,
Maeve says.
I've been reading them for days. Other people started them, but he jumped right in and said all kinds of awful things. He didn't even care when that boy killed all those people in Orange County.
She's still tapping away when Janae's hand shoots out and locks around her wrist, almost knocking her phone from her hand.
How would you know that?
She hisses, and Maeve finally snaps out of the zone to realize she might have said too much.
Let her go, I say.
When Janae doesn't, I reach out and pry her fingers off Maeve's wrist. They're icy cold. Janae pushes her chair back with a loud scrape, and when she gets to her feet, she's shaking all over.
None of you knew anything about him,
she says in a choked voice, and stomps away just like Leah did. Except she's probably not about to give Mikhail Powers a sound bite. Maeve and I exchange glances as I drum my fingers on the table. I can't figure Janae out. Most days, I'm not sure why she sits with us when we must be a constant reminder of Simon. Unless it's to hear conversations like the one we just had.
I gotta go,
Cooper says abruptly, as though he's used up his allotted non-Jake time. He lifts his tray, where the bulk of his lunch lies untouched, and smoothly makes his way to his usual table. So our crew is back to being all girls, and stays that way for the rest of lunch. The only other guy who'd sit with us never bothers making an appearance in the cafeteria. But I pass Nate in the hallway afterward, and all the questions bubbling in my brain about Simon, Leah, and Janae disappear when he gives me a fleeting grin. Because, God, it's beautiful when that boy smiles.
Addie, Friday, October 19th, 11:12 a.m. It's hot on the track, and I shouldn't feel like running very hard. It's only gym class, after all. But my arms and legs pump with unexpected energy as my lungs fill and expand, as if all my recent bike riding has given me reserves that need a release. Sweat beads my forehead and pastes my T-shirt to my back. I feel a jolt of pride as I pass Luis, who, granted, is barely trying, and Olivia, who's on the track team. Jake's ahead of me, and the idea of catching him seems ridiculous, because obviously Jake is much faster than me, and bigger and stronger, too, and there's no way I can gain on him, except I am. He's not a speck anymore. He's close. And if I shift lanes and keep this pace going, I can almost, probably, definitely... My legs fly out from under me. The coppery taste of blood fills my mouth as I bite into my lip and my palms slam hard against the ground. Tiny stones shred my skin, embedding in raw flesh and exploding into dozens of tiny cuts. My knees are in agony, and I know before I see thick red dots on the ground that my skin's burst open on both of them.
Oh, no! Vanessa's voice rings with fake concern. Poor thing! Her legs gave out!
They didn't. While my eyes were on Jake, someone's foot hooked my ankle and brought me down. I have a pretty good idea whose, but can't say anything, because I'm too busy trying to suck air into my lungs.
Addie, are you okay? Vanessa keeps her fake voice on as she kneels next to me until she's right next to my ear and whispers, "Served you right, slut." I'd love to answer her, but I still can't breathe. When our gym teacher arrives, Vanessa backs off, and by the time I have enough air to talk, she's gone. The gym teacher inspects my knees, turns my hands over, clucks at the damage. "You need the nurse's office. Get those cuts cleaned up and some antibiotics on you." She scans the crowd that's gathered around me and calls, "Miss Vargas, help her out." I guess I should be grateful it's not Vanessa or Jake. But I've barely seen Janae since Bronwyn's sister called Simon out a couple of days ago. As I limp toward school, Janae doesn't look at me until we're almost at the entrance. "What happened?" she asks as she opens the door. By now, I have enough breath to laugh. Vanessa's version of slut-shaming. I turn left instead of right at the stairwell, heading for the locker room. "You're supposed to go to the nurses," Janae says, and I flutter my hand at her. I haven't darkened the nurse's doorstep in weeks. And anyway, my cuts are painful, but superficial. All I really need is a shower. I limp to a stall and peel off my clothes, stepping under the warm spray and watching brown and red water swirl down the drain. I stay in the shower until the water's clear, and when I step out, a towel wrapped around me. Janae's there, holding a pack of Band-Aids. "I got these for you. Your knees need them." "Thanks." I lower myself onto a bench and press flesh-colored strips across my knees, which sure enough are getting slick with blood again. My palms sting, and they're scraped pink and raw. But there's nowhere I can put a Band-Aid that will make a difference. Janae sits as far away as possible from me on the bench. I put 3 Band-Aids on my left knee and 2 on my right. "Vanessa's a bitch," she says quietly. "Yeah, I agree," standing and taking a cautious step. My legs hold up, so I head for my locker and pull out my clothes. "But I'm getting what I deserve, right? That's what everybody thinks." I guess it's what Simon would have wanted. Everything out in the open for people to judge. No secrets. "Simon?" Janae's got that strangled sound to her voice again. He wasn't like they said. I mean, yes, he went overboard with about that, and he wrote some awful things. But the past couple years have been rough. He tried so hard to be part of things, and he never could. I don't think... She stumbles over her words. "When Simon was himself, he wouldn't have wanted this for you." She sounds really sad about it. But I can't bring myself to care about Simon now. I finish dressing and look at the clock. There's still 20 minutes left in gym class, and I don't want to be here when Vanessa and her minions descend. "Thanks for the Band-Aids. Tell them I'm still at the nurse's, okay? I'm going to the library till next period." "Okay," Janae says. She's slumped on the bench, looking hollowed out and exhausted. And as I head for the door, she abruptly calls out, "Do you want to hang out this afternoon?" I turn to her in surprise. I hadn't thought we were at that point in our acquaintance, I guess. Friendship still seems like a strong word. "Yeah, sure. My mom's having her book club, so... maybe I could come to your house?" "All right," I say, picturing my own mother's reaction to Janae after being used to a house full of pretty perky Keelys and Olivias. The thought brightens me up, and we make plans for Janae to stop by after school. On a whim, I text an invitation to Bronwyn, but I forgot she's grounded. Plus, she has piano lessons. Spontaneous downtime isn't really her thing. I've barely stowed my bike under the porch after school when Janae arrives, dragging her oversized backpack like she came to study. We make excruciating small talk with my mother, whose eyes keep roving from Janae's multiple piercings to her scuffed combat boots until I bring her upstairs to watch TV. "Do you like that new Netflix show?" I ask, aiming the remote at my television and sprawling across my bed so Janae can take the armchair. "The superhero one?" She sits gingerly, like she's afraid the pink plaid will swallow her whole. Yeah, okay, she says, lowering her backpack next to her and looking at all the framed photographs on my wall. You're really into flowers, huh? Not exactly. My sister has a new camera I was playing around with, and I took a lot of old pictures down recently. They're shoved beneath my shoeboxes now. A dozen memories of me and Jake from the past 3 years, and almost as many with my friends. I hesitated over one. Me, Keely, Olivia, and Vanessa at the beach last summer, wearing giant sun hats and goofy grins with a brilliant blue sky behind us. It had been a rare, fun girls' day out. But after today, I'm more glad than ever that I banished Vanessa's stupid smirk to the closet. Janae fiddles with the strap to her backpack. You must miss how things were before, she says, in a low voice. I keep my eyes trained on the screen while I consider her comment. Yes, and no, I say finally. I miss how easy school used to be. But I guess nobody I hung out with ever really cared about me, right? Or things would have been different. I shift restlessly on the bed and add, I'm not going to pretend it's anything like what you're dealing with, losing Simon that way. Janae flushes and doesn't answer, and I wish I hadn't brought it up. I can't figure out how to interact with her. Are we friends, or just a couple of people without better options? We stare silently at the television until Janae clears her throat and says, Could I have something to drink? Sure. It's almost a relief to escape the silence that's settled between us, until I run into my mother in the kitchen and have a terse 10-minute-long conversation about the kind of friends you have now. When I finally get back upstairs, two glasses of lemonade in hand, Janae's got her backpack on, and she's halfway out the door. I don't feel well, suddenly, she mumbles. Great. Even my unsuitable friends don't want to hang out with me. I text Bronwyn in frustration, not expecting an answer since she's probably in the middle of Chopin or something. I'm surprised when she messages me back right away, and even more surprised at what she writes. Be careful. I don't trust her.
Chapter 22
Cooper Sunday, October 21st, 5:25 p.m. We've almost finished dinner when Pop's phone rings. He looks at the number and picks up immediately, the lines around his mouth deepening.
This is Kevin. Yeah. What, tonight? Is that really necessary?
He waits a beat.
All right. We'll see you there.
He hangs up and blows out an irritated sigh.
We gotta meet your lawyer at the police station in half an hour. Detective Chang wants to talk to you again.
He holds up a hand when I open my mouth.
I don't know what about.
I swallow hard. I haven't been questioned in a while, and I'd been hoping the whole thing was fading away. I want to text Addie and see if she's getting brought in too, but I'm under strict orders not to put anything about the investigation in writing. Calling Addie's not a great idea either. So I finish my dinner in silence and drive to the station with Pop. My lawyer, Mary, is already talking with Detective Chang when we get inside. He beckons us toward the interrogation room, which is nothing like you see on TV. No big pane of glass with a two-way mirror behind it. Just a drab little room with a conference table and a bunch of folding chairs.
Hello, Cooper. Mr. Clay. Thanks for coming.
I'm about to brush past him through the door when he puts a hand on my arm.
You sure you want your father here?
I'm about to ask, why wouldn't I? But before I can speak, Pop starts blustering about how it's his God-given right to be present during questioning. He has this speech perfected. And once he winds up, he needs to finish.
Of course, Detective Chang says politely. It's mainly a privacy issue for Cooper.
The way he says that makes me nervous, and I look to Mary for help. It should be fine to start with just me in the room, Kevin, she says. I'll bring you in if needed. Mary's okay. She's in her 50s, no nonsense, and can handle both the police and my father. So in the end, it's me, Detective Chang, and Mary, seating ourselves around the table. My heart's already pounding when Detective Chang pulls out a laptop. You've always been vocal about Simon's accusation not being true, Cooper. And there's been no drop in your baseball performance, which is inconsistent with the reputation of Simon's app. It wasn't known for posting lies. I try to keep my expression neutral, even though I've been thinking the same thing. I was more relieved than mad when Detective Chang first showed me Simon's site, because a lie was better than the truth. But why would Simon lie about me? So we dug a little deeper. Turns out we missed something in our initial analysis of Simon's files. There was a second entry for you that was encrypted and replaced with the steroids accusation. It took a while to get that file figured out, but the original is here. He turns the screen so it's facing Mary and me. We lean forward together to read it. Everybody wants a piece of Bayview Southpaw CC, and he's finally been tempted. He's stepping out on the beauteous KS with a hot German underwear model. What guy wouldn't, right? Except the new love interest models boxers and briefs, not bras and thongs. Sorry, Kay, but you can't compete when you play for the wrong team. Every part of me feels frozen except my eyes, which can't stop blinking. This is what I was afraid I'd see weeks ago. Cooper, Mary's voice is even. There's no need to react to this. Do you have a question, Detective Chang?
Yes.
Is the rumor Simon planned to print true, Cooper? Mary speaks before I can. There's nothing criminal in this accusation. Cooper doesn't need to address it.
Mary, you know that's not the case. We have an interesting situation here. Four students with four entries they want to keep quiet. One gets deleted and replaced with a fake. Do you know what that looks like?
Shoddy rumor-mongering? Mary asks.
Like someone accessed Simon's files to get rid of this particular entry and made sure Simon wouldn't be around to correct it.
I need a few minutes with my client, Mary says. I feel sick. I've imagined breaking the news about Chris to my parents in dozens of ways, but none as flat-out horrible as this.
Of course, you should know we'll be requesting a warrant to search more of the Clays' home, beyond Cooper's computer and cell phone records. Given this new information, he's a more significant person of interest than he was previously.
Mary has a hand on my arm. She doesn't want me to talk. She doesn't have to worry. I couldn't if I tried. Disclosing information about sexual orientation violates constitutional rights to privacy. That's what Mary says, and she's threatened to involve the American Civil Liberties Union if the police make Simon's post about me public, which would fall into the category of too little, way too late. Detective Chang dances around it. They have no intention of invading my privacy, but they have to investigate. It would help if I told them everything. Our definitions of everything are different. His includes me confessing that I killed Simon, deleted my About That entry, and replaced it with a fake one about steroids. Which makes no sense. Wouldn't I have taken myself out of the equation entirely? Or come up with something less career-threatening, like cheating on Keeley with another girl? That might have killed two birds with one stone, so to speak.
This changes nothing. Mary keeps saying. You have no more proof than you ever did that Cooper touched Simon's site.
Don't you dare disclose sensitive information in the name of your investigation. The thing is, though, it doesn't matter. It's getting out. This case has been full of leaks from the beginning, and I can't waltz out of here after being interrogated for an hour and tell my father nothing's changed. When Detective Chang leaves, he makes it clear they'll be digging deep into my life over the next few days. They want Chris's number. Mary tells me I don't have to provide it, but Detective Chang reminds her they'll subpoena my cell phone and get it anyway. They want to talk to Keeley, too. Mary keeps threatening the ACLU, and Detective Chang keeps telling her, mild as skim milk, that they need to understand my actions in the weeks leading up to the murder. But we all know what's really happening. They'll make my life miserable until I cave from the pressure. I sit with Mary in the interrogation room after Detective Chang leaves, thankful there's no two-way mirror as I bury my head in my hands. Life as I knew it is over, and pretty soon nobody will look at me the same way. I was going to tell eventually, but in a few years, maybe, when I was a star pitcher and untouchable. Not now. Not like this.
Cooper?
Mary puts a hand on my shoulder.
Your father will be wondering why we're still in here. You need to talk to him.
I can't, I say automatically. Can't.
Your father loves you, she says quietly.
I almost laugh. Pop loves Cooperstown. He loves when I strike out the side and get attention from flashy scouts and when my name scrolls across the bottom of ESPN. But me? He doesn't even know me.
There's a knock on the door before I can reply. Pop pokes his head in and snaps his fingers.
We done in here? I want to get home.
All set, I say.
The hell is that all about? He demands of Mary.
You and Cooper need to talk, she says.
Pop's jaw tenses.
What the hell are we paying you for? Is written all over his face.
We can discuss next steps after that.
Fantastic, Pop mutters.
I stand and squeeze myself through the narrow gap between the table and the wall, ducking past Mary and into the hallway. We walk in silence, one in front of the other, until we pass through the double glass doors and Mary murmurs a goodbye.
Night,
Pop says tersely, leading the way to our car at the far end of the parking lot. Everything in me clenches and twists as I buckle myself next to him in the Jeep. How do I start? What do I say? Do I tell him now or wait till we're home and I can tell Mom and Nani and... Oh, God. Lucas?
What was all that about?
Pop asks.
What took so long?
There's new evidence, I say woodenly.
Yeah? What's that?
I can't. Not just the two of us in this car. Let's wait till we're home.
This serious, Coop?
Pop glances at me as he passes a slow-moving Volkswagen.
You in trouble?
My palms start sweating. Let's wait, I repeat.
I need to tell Chris what's happening, but I don't dare text him. I should go to his apartment and explain in person.
Another conversation that'll kill some part of me. Chris has been out since junior high. His parents are both artists, and it was never a big deal. They were pretty much like, yeah, we knew. What took you so long? He's never pressured me, but sneaking around isn't how he wants to live. I stare out the window, my fingers tapping on the door handle for the rest of the ride home. Pop pulls into the driveway and our house looms in front of me. Solid, familiar, and the last place I want to be right now. We head inside. Pop tossing his keys onto the hallway table and catching sight of my mother in the living room. She and Nani are sitting next to each other on the couch as though they've been waiting for us.
Where's Lucas? I ask, following Pop into the room.
Downstairs, playing Xbox. Mom mutes the television as Nani cocks her head to one side and fastens her eyes on me.
Everything okay?
Cooper's being all mysterious.
Pop's glance at me is half shrewd, half dismissive. He doesn't know whether to take my obvious freaking out seriously or not.
You tell us, Cooperstown. What's all the fuss about? They got some actual evidence this time?
They think they do. I clear my throat and push my hands into my khakis. I mean, they do. I have new information. Everybody's quiet. Absorbing that until they notice I'm not in any hurry to continue.
What kind of new information? Mom prompts.
There was an entry on Simon's site that was encrypted before the police got there. I guess it's what he originally meant to post about me. Nothing to do with steroids. There goes my accent again. Pop never lost his and doesn't notice when mine fades in and out.
I knew it, he says triumphantly. They clear you then?
I'm mute, my mind blank. Nani leans forward, hands gripping her skull-topped cane.
Cooper, what was Simon going to post about you?
Well, a couple of words is all it'll take to make everything in my life before and after. The air leaves my lungs. I can't look at my mother, and I sure as hell can't look at my father, so I focus on Nani. Simon somehow found out that... God, I've run out of filler words. Nani taps her cane on the floor like she wants to help me along. I'm gay. Pop laughs. Actually laughs, a relieved kind of guffaw, and slaps me on the shoulder.
Jesus, Coop! Had me going there for a minute. Seriously, what's up?
Kevin?
Nani grits the word through her teeth.
Cooper is not joking.
Course he is, Pop says, still laughing.
I watch his face because I'm pretty sure it's the last time he'll look at me the way he always has.
Right?
His eyes slide over to mine, casual and confident. But when he sees my face, his smile dims. There it is.
Right, Coop?
Wrong, I tell him.
Chapter 23
Addie, Monday, October 22nd, 8:45 a.m. Police cars line the front of Bayview High again, and Cooper's stumbling through the hall like he hasn't slept in days. It doesn't occur to me the two might be related until he pulls me aside before first bell. Can we talk? I peer at him more closely, unease gnawing at my stomach. I've never seen Cooper's eyes look bloodshot before. Yeah, sure. I think he means here in the hallway, but to my surprise, he leads me out the back staircase into the parking lot, where we lean against the wall next to the door. Which means I'll be late for homeroom, I guess, but my attendance record is already so bad another tardy won't make a difference. What's up? Cooper runs a hand through his sandy hair until it sticks straight up, which is not a thing I ever imagined Cooper's hair could do until just now.
I think the police are here because of me, to ask questions about me. I just wanted to tell somebody why before everything goes to hell.
Okay. I put a hand on his forearm, and tense in surprise when I feel it shaking. Cooper, what's wrong?
So, the thing is...
He pauses, swallowing hard. He looks like he's about to confess something. For a second, Simon flashes through my mind. His collapse in detention, and his red, gasping face as he struggled to breathe. I can't help but flinch. Then I meet Cooper's eyes, fill me with tears, but as kind as ever, and I know that can't be it. The thing is what, Cooper? It's all right. You can tell me. Cooper stares at me, taking in the whole picture, messy hair that's spiking oddly because I didn't take the time to blow-dry it, so-so skin from all the stress, faded t-shirt featuring some band Ashton used to like, because we're seriously behind on laundry. Before he replies,
I'm gay.
Oh. It doesn't register at first. And then it does. Oh. The whole not into Keely thing suddenly makes sense. It seems like I should say more than that, so I add, cool. Inadequate response, I guess,
but sincere. Because Cooper's pretty great, except the way he's always been a little remote. This explains a lot.
Simon found out I'm seeing someone. A guy. He was gonna post it on About That with everyone else's entries. It got switched out and replaced with a fake entry about me using steroids. I didn't switch it, he adds hastily, but they think I did. So they're looking into me hardcore now, which means the whole school will know pretty soon. I guess I wanted to tell somebody myself.
Cooper, no one will care, I start, but he shakes his head.
They will. You know they will, he says.
I drop my eyes, because I can't deny it.
I've been hiding my head under a rock about this whole investigation, he continues, his voice hoarse, hoping they'd chalk it up to an accident, because there's no real proof about anything. Now I keep thinking about what Maeve said about Simon the other day, how much weird stuff was going on around him. You think there's anything to that?
Bronwyn does, I say. She wants the four of us to get together and compare notes. She says Nate will. Cooper nods distractedly, and it occurs to me that since he's still in Jake's bubble most of the time, he's not fully up to speed on everything that's been going on. Did you hear about Nate's mom, by the way? How she's, not dead after all? I didn't think Cooper could get any paler, but he manages.
What?
Kind of a long story, but, yeah. Turns out she was a drug addict, living in some kind of commune, but she's back now. And sober, supposedly. Oh, and Bronwyn got called into the police station because of a creepy post Simon wrote about her sister sophomore year. Bronwyn told him to drop dead in the comments section, so, you know, that looks kinda bad now.
The hell?
By the incredulous look on Cooper's face, I've managed to distract him from his problems. Then the late bell rings, and his shoulders sag.
We'd better go. But yeah, if you guys get together, I'm in.
The Bayview police set themselves up in a conference room with the school liaison again, and start interviewing students one by one. At first, things are kind of quiet. And when we get through the day without any rumors, I'm hopeful that Cooper was wrong about his secret getting out. But by mid-morning on Tuesday, the whispers start. I don't know if it's the kind of questions the police were asking, or who they were talking to, or just a good old-fashioned leak, but before lunch, my ex-friend Olivia, who hasn't spoken to me since Jake punched TJ, runs up to my locker and grabs my arm with a look of pure glee.
Oh my God! Did you hear about Cooper?
Her eyes pop with excitement as she lowers her voice to a piercing whisper.
Everyone's saying he's gay.
I pull away. If Olivia thinks I'm grateful to be included in the gossip mill, she's wrong. Who cares? I say flatly.
Well, Keely does,
Olivia giggles, tossing her hair over her shoulder.
No wonder he wouldn't sleep with her. Are you headed to lunch now?
Yeah, with Bronwyn. See you. I slam my locker shut and spin on my heel before she can say anything else. In the cafeteria, I collect my food and head for our usual table. Bronwyn looks pretty in a sweater dress and boots, her hair loose around her shoulders. Her cheeks are so pink, I wonder if she's wearing makeup for a change. But if she is, it's really natural. She keeps looking at the door. Expecting someone? I ask. She turns redder.
Maybe.
I have a pretty good idea who she's waiting for. Probably not Cooper, although the rest of the room seems to be. When he steps into the cafeteria, everything goes quiet, and then a low, whispering buzz runs through the room.
Cooper Clay is Cooper Gay!
Somebody calls out in a high, falsetto voice, and Cooper freezes in the door as something flies through the air and hits him across the chest. I recognize the blue packaging immediately. Trojan condoms. Jake's brand. Along with half the school, I guess. but it did come from the direction of my old table.
"Doing the butt, hey, pretty,"
somebody else sings, and laughter runs through the room. Some of it's mean, but a lot of it's shocked and nervous. Most people look like they don't know what to do. I'm struck silent, because Cooper's face is the worst thing I've ever seen, and I want so badly for this to not be happening.
"Oh, for fuck's sake."
It's Nate. He's in the entrance next to Cooper, which surprises me since I've never seen him in the cafeteria before. The rest of the room is equally taken aback, quieting enough that his contemptuous voice cuts across the whispers as he surveys the scene in front of him.
"You losers seriously give a crap about this? Get a life."
A girl's voice calls out, "Boyfriend!" disguised with a fake cough. Vanessa smirks as everyone around her dissolves into the kind of laughter that's been directed my way over the past month, half guilty, half gleeful, and all, "Thank God this is happening to you and not me." The only exceptions are Keely, who's biting her lip and staring at the floor, and Luis, who's half standing with his forearms braced on the table. One of the lunch ladies hovers in the doorway between the kitchen and the cafeteria, seemingly torn between letting things play out and getting a teacher to intervene. Nate zeroes in on Vanessa's smug face without a trace of self-consciousness.
"Really? You've got something to say? I don't even know your name, and you tried to stick your hand down my pants the last time we were at a party."
More laughter, but this time, it's not at Cooper's expense.
"In fact, if there's a guy at Bayview you haven't tried that with, I'd love to meet him."
Vanessa's mouth hangs open as a hand shoots up from the middle of the cafeteria.
"Me?"
calls a boy, sitting at the computer nerd table. His friends all laugh nervously as the pulsing attention of the room. Seriously, it's like a wave moving from one target to the next, focuses on them. Nate gives him a thumbs up and looks back at Vanessa.
"There you go. Try to make that happen and shut the hell up."
He crosses to our table and dumps his backpack next to Bronwyn. She stands up, winds her arms around his neck, and kisses him like they're alone while the entire cafeteria erupts into gasps and catcalls. I stare as much as everyone else. I mean, I kind of guessed, but this is pretty public. I'm not sure if Bronwyn's trying to distract everyone from Cooper or if she couldn't help herself. Maybe both. Either way, Cooper's effectively been forgotten. He's motionless at the entrance until I grab his arm. "Come sit. The whole murder club at one table. They can stare at all of us together." Cooper follows me, not bothering to get any food. We settle ourselves at the table and awkward silence descends until someone else approaches. Luis, with his tray in hand, lowering himself into the last empty chair at our table.
"That was bullshit,"
he fumes, looking at the empty space in front of Cooper.
"Aren't you gonna eat?"
"I'm not hungry,"
Cooper says shortly.
"You should eat something."
Luis grabs the only untouched food item on his tray and holds it out.
"Here, have a banana."
Everyone freezes for a second. Then we all burst out laughing at the same time, including Cooper, who rests his chin in his palm and massages his temple with his other hand.
"I'll pass," he says.
I've never seen Luis so red.
"Why couldn't it have been apple day?"
he mutters, and Cooper gives him a tired smile. You find out who your real friends are when stuff like this happens. Turns out I didn't have any, but I'm glad Cooper does.
Chapter 24.
Nate, Thursday, October 25th, 12:20 a.m. I ease my motorcycle into the cul-de-sac at the end of Bayview Estates and kill the motor, staying still for a minute to check for any hint that someone's nearby. It's quiet, so I climb off and give a hand to Bronwyn so she can do the same. The neighborhood is still a half-finished construction area with no streetlights, so Bronwyn and I walk in darkness to house number 5.
When we get there, I try the front door, but it's locked. We circle to the back of the house, and I jiggle each window until I find one that opens. It's low enough to the ground that I haul myself in easily. "Go back out front. I'll let you in," I say in a low voice. "I think I can do it too," Bronwyn says, preparing to pull herself up. She doesn't have the arm strength, though, and I have to lean over and help her. The window's not big enough for two, and when I let go and step back to give her room, she scrambles the rest of the way and lands on the floor with a thud. "Graceful," I say as she gets to her feet and brushes off her jeans. "Shut up," she mutters, looking around. "Should we unlock the front for Addie and Cooper?" We're in an empty under-construction house after midnight for a meeting of the Bayview 4. It's like a bad spy movie. But there's no way all of us could get together anywhere else without drawing too much attention. Even my don't-give-a-crap neighbors are suddenly in my business, now that Mikhail Powers' team keeps cruising down our street. Plus, Bronwyn's still grounded. "Yeah," I say. And we feel our way through a half-built kitchen and into a living room with a huge bay window. The moonlight streams bright across the door, and I twist its deadbolt open. "What time did you tell them?"
12:30,
she says, pressing a button on her Apple Watch. "What time is it?"
12:25.
"Good. We have 5 minutes." I slide my hand along the side of her face and back her up against the wall, pulling her lips to mine. She leans into me and wraps her arms around my neck, opening her mouth with a soft sigh. My hands travel down the curve of her waist to her hips, finding a strip of bare skin under the hem of her skirt. Bronwyn has this unbelievable stealth body under all her conservative clothes, although I've barely gotten to see any of it.
"Nate,"
she whispers after a few minutes, in that breathless voice that drives me wild.
"You were going to tell me how things went with your mom?"
"Yeah, I guess I was. I saw my mother again this afternoon, and it was all right. She showed up on time and sober. She backed off asking questions and gave me money for bills. But I spent the whole time taking bets with myself on how long it'd last. Current odds say 2 weeks." Before I can answer, though, the door creaks and we're not alone anymore. A small figure slips inside and shuts the door behind her. The moonlight's bright enough that I can see Addie clearly, including the unexpected dark streaks in her hair.
"Oh, good. I'm not the first one," she whispers,
then puts her hands on her hips as she glares at Bronwyn and me.
"Are you two making out? Seriously? Do you dye your hair?"
Bronwyn counters, pulling away from me.
"What color is that?"
She reaches a hand out and examines Addie's bangs.
"Purple? I like it. Why the change?"
"I can't keep up with the maintenance requirements of short hair," Addie grumbles, dropping a bike helmet on the floor.
"It doesn't look as bad with color mixed in."
She cocks her head at me and adds,
"I don't need your commentary if you disagree, by the way."
I hold up my hands.
"Wasn't going to say a word, Addie." "When did you even start knowing my name?"
she deadpans. I grin at her.
"You've gotten kind of feisty since you lost all the hair."
"And the boyfriend."
She rolls her eyes. "Where are we doing this? Living room?" "Yeah, but back corner, away from the window,"
Bronwyn says, picking her way through construction supplies and sitting cross-legged in front of a stone fireplace. I sprawl next to her and wait for Addie to follow, but she's still poised near the door.
"I think I hear something,"
she says, peering through the peephole. She opens the door a crack and steps aside to let Cooper in.
Addie leads him toward the fireplace, but nearly goes flying when she trips on an extension cord. Ow! Damn it, that was loud. Sorry. She settles herself next to Bronwyn, and Cooper sits beside her. How are things? Bronwyn asks Cooper. He rubs a hand over his face. Oh, you know, living the nightmare. My father won't talk to me. I'm getting torn apart online, and none of the teams that were scouting me will return Coach Ruffalo's calls. Other than that, I'm great. I'm so sorry, Bronwyn says, and Addie grabs his hand and folds it in both of hers. He heaves a sigh but doesn't pull away.
It is what it is, I guess. Let's just get to why we're here, huh?
Bronwyn clears her throat. Well, mainly to compare notes. Eli kept talking about looking for patterns and connections, which makes a lot of sense. I thought maybe we could go through some of the things we know and don't know. She frowns and starts ticking things off on her fingers. Simon was about to post some pretty shocking things about all of us. Somebody got us into that room together with the fake cell phones. Simon was poisoned while we were there. Lots of people besides us had reasons to be mad at Simon. He was mixed up in all kinds of creepy 4chan stuff. Who knows what kind of people he pissed off. Janae said he hated being an outsider, and he was really upset nothing more ever happened with Keeley, Addie says, looking at Cooper. Do you remember that? He started hitting on her during junior prom, and she caved at a party a couple weeks later and hooked up with him for, like, 5 minutes. He thought it was actually going somewhere. Cooper hunches his shoulders like he's remembering something he'd rather not.
Right. Huh. I guess that's a pattern. Or a connection or whatever. With me and Nate, I mean.
I don't get it.
What?
He meets my eyes.
When I broke up with Keeley, she told me she'd hooked up with you at a party to get rid of Simon. And I asked her out a couple weeks after.
You and Keeley? Addie stares at me. She never said.
It was just a couple of times. Honestly, I'd forgotten all about it.
And you're good friends with Keeley. Or you were, Bronwyn says to Addie. She doesn't seem fazed at the idea of Keeley and me getting together, and I have to appreciate how she doesn't lose focus.
But I have nothing to do with her, so I don't know. Does that mean something or doesn't it?
I don't see how it could, Cooper says. Nobody except Simon cared what happened between him and Keeley.
Keeley might have, Bronwyn points out.
Cooper stifles a laugh.
You can't think Keeley had anything to do with this.
We're freewheeling here, Bronwyn says, leaning forward and propping her chin in her hand. She's a common thread.
Yeah, but Keeley has zero motive for anything. Shouldn't we be talking about people who hated Simon? Besides you, Cooper adds, and Bronwyn goes rigid. I mean, for that blog post he wrote about your sister? Addie told me about it. I was low, really low. I never saw it the first time around. I'd have said something if I did.
Well, I didn't kill him for it, Bronwyn says tightly.
I'm not saying,
Cooper starts, but Addie interrupts. Let's stay on track. What about Leah, or even Aiden Wu? You can't tell me they wouldn't have liked revenge. Bronwyn swallows and lowers her eyes.
I wonder about Leah, too. She's been... Well, I have a connection to her I haven't told you guys about. She and I were partners in a Model UN competition, and by mistake, we told Simon a wrong deadline that got him disqualified. He started torturing Leah on about that right after.
Bronwyn's told me this, actually. It's been eating at her for a while. But it's news to Cooper and Addie, who starts bobbing her head. So Leah's got a reason to hate Simon and be mad at you. Then she frowns. But what about the rest of us? Why drag us along? I shrug. Maybe we were just the secrets Simon had on hand. Collateral damage. Bronwyn sighs.
I don't know. Leah's hot-headed, but not exactly sneaky. I'm more confused about Janae's deal.
She turns toward Addie. One of the strangest things about the Tumblr is how many details it got right. You'd almost have to be one of us to know that stuff, or spend a lot of time with us. Don't you think it's weird that Janae hangs out with us, even though we're accused of killing her best friend?
Well, to be fair, I did invite her, Addie says. But she's been awfully skittish lately. And did you guys notice she and Simon weren't together as much as usual right before he died? I keep wondering if something happened between them.
She leans back and chews on her bottom lip.
I suppose if anybody would have known what secrets Simon was about to spill and how to use them, it'd be Janae. I don't know, you guys. I'm not sure Janae's got an inner to do something like this.
Maybe Simon rejected her and she killed him? Cooper looks doubtful before he finishes the sentence. Don't see how, though. She wasn't there.
Bronwyn shrugs. We don't know that for sure. When I talked to Eli, he kept saying somebody could have planned the car accident as a distraction to slip into the room. If you take that as a possibility, anyone could have done it.
I made fun of Bronwyn when she first brought that up, but I don't know. I wish I could remember more about that day. Could say for sure whether it's even possible. The whole thing's turned into a blur. One of the cars was a red Camaro, Cooper recalls. Looked ancient. I don't remember ever seeing it in the parking lot before or since. Which is weird when you think about it.
Oh, come on, Addie scoffs. That's so far-fetched. Sounds like a lawyer with a guilty client grasping at straws. Someone new was probably just picking up a kid that day.
Maybe, Cooper says. I don't know. Luis's brother works in a repair place downtown. Maybe I'll ask him if a car like that came through, or if he can check with some other shops.
He holds up a hand at Addie's raised brows.
Hey, you're not the police's favorite new person of interest, okay? I'm desperate here. We're not getting anywhere with this conversation, but I'm struck by a couple of things as I listen to them talk. One, I like all of them more than I thought I would. Bronwyn's obviously been the biggest surprise, and like doesn't cover it. But Addie's turned into kind of a badass, and Cooper's not as one-dimensional as I thought. And two, I don't think any of them did it.
Bronwyn, Friday, October 26th, 8 p.m. Friday night, my entire family settles in to watch Mikhail Powers Investigates. I'm feeling more dread than usual, between bracing myself for Simon's blog post about Maeve and worrying that something about Nate and me will make it into the broadcast. I never should have kissed him at school, although in my defense, he was unbelievably hot at that particular moment. Anyway, we're all nervous. Maeve curls next to me as Mikhail's theme music plays and photos of Bayview flash across the screen. A murder investigation turns witch hunt when police tactics include revealing personal information in the name of evidence collection. Have they gone too far? Wait, what? The camera zooms in on Mikhail, and he is pissed. I sit up straighter as he stares into the camera and says, "Things in Bayview, California turned ugly this week when a closeted student involved in the investigation was outed